We wish to extend a warm welcome to all who accepted an invitation to attend this convention. Today, all mankind must cope with the tragic loss of loved ones in death. The Bible's message of hope may surprise you. What is that hope? And why can we have confidence in it? Please pay careful attention to the answers presented in the following public Bible discourse entitled, "The Resurrection Hope Imparts Courage, How?" This talk will be given by Brother Darren Wakeford, former circuit overseer, coordinator for our regional convention committee, and elder in the Edmonton Steel Heights congregation. Brother Wakeford, we are eager to listen.
It seems that everything causes side effects these days. Technology, food, medication, and the worst side effect of them all? Death. But if death had a side effect, what would it be? Like, if death was in a bottle of pills, what would be written on the label on the side for side effects? Well, first of all, death, right? Death scares people to death. And then, you may see it says, may cause helplessness, frustration, or even fear. In fact, that's true. Researchers, in all their knowledge and all their funding and all their research, have come up for a name that shows how people feel when they refer to death. You know what it is? Death anxiety. Like anxiety a person gets when they fly or when they are on heights. Death is the most terrible of all things, for it is the end. That's what Aristotle said. So I guess it's true what researchers are saying. People fear death. They fear the unknown, the pain, losing someone, perhaps, or maybe leaving someone behind. And religious beliefs notwithstanding, the idea that death is the absolute end scares many people, even if they believe in God. And that's because they don't want to think about it. Oftentimes when there's a funeral, people will even change the name. They'll call it a celebration of life. Or they will at all costs try to avoid even the thought of the funeral. They'll have white caskets, music, maybe singers. Understandably so. Did you know that about 59 million people die every year? That's two people every second. And thrown into those numbers are children. One child under the age of five actually dies every 3 seconds. It takes your breath away, doesn't it, when you hear that? You probably heard what one man said about children. He said, when a person loses a mate, they're a widow. When they lose a parent, they're an orphan. But there's no words to describe when a person loses a child in death. It's heartbreaking. Parents know that it's terrible to even think about losing a child, that they should even die before them. But you know, in the Bible, in Jesus' day, that's probably how one man felt. His name was Jairus. He felt helpless, fearful. He probably had death anxiety because his 12-year-old little girl was very sick and she was going to die. Can you envision the scene at Mark chapter 5 when you turn there? There, this man who was probably prominent suddenly loses all composure when he approaches Jesus. He throws himself at his feet, and in verse 23, he doesn't just ask Jesus once, but it tells us there he pleads with him many times. He's reduced to just a mere child pleading before an adult. And then in verse 35, the unthinkable happens. The young child dies. Well, are you a parent? It's inconceivable, isn't it? And yet that's what happened to Jairus. Sometimes when we visit a person that's grieving, or perhaps is about to be near death, we're at a loss for words. We don't know what to say. But if you notice in verse 36 of Mark chapter 5, Jesus seen the situation a little differently. Yes, he was going to help out this father. He was going to help out the child. And you notice in very calm words, simply he said, have no fear, exercise faith. Faith in what? That probably was going through Jairus' mind. I mean, what was he about to do? Resurrect the little girl. That in itself is faith strengthening. Because Jesus approached death not as a result, but as a condition. You see, if you go to the doctor and the doctor diagnoses you with a disease like cancer, maybe even a serious thing like Ebola, well, the result might be death. But if you have a condition, that's completely different. A condition can be treated and even reversed. So when Jesus went to Jairus' home, he was going to reverse the condition of death. And he announced to all those mourning that the dead girl was simply sleeping in verses 38 and 39 of Mark chapter 5. That was groundbreaking that anyone would ever say such a thing. But the people's reaction around him, they thought he was crazy. Jesus had lost his mind, perhaps, they thought. Maybe they thought that Jesus hadn't come to terms with death. Have you ever heard someone say that? That when a person loses a loved one in death, or maybe they're close to death themselves, that they haven't come to terms with death. But you know, Jesus was going to do something the opposite. We always call Jesus the greatest doctor that ever lived, the greatest carpenter. Jesus was great at everything. He was probably the greatest lawyer too, the greatest negotiator. And in this case, he was going to change the terms. He was going to rewrite the contract, and he did. Jesus raised Jairus' daughter back to life. In verses 41 and 42, he simply held her hand and said, "Get up!" Well, he rewound, he reversed death, you could say, just like a person might rewind a video of a person. Imagine the joy and relief the parents of that little girl felt. So while this account teaches us that death is the end, it can be undone. That's also shown in another example. When Jesus' friend Lazarus died, Jesus again compared the situation of the dead to sleep. Let's turn there together. At John chapter 11, John chapter 11, and we'll look at verses 11 to 14. Starting in verse 11, it's recorded there, "After he said these things, he added, 'Lazarus, our friend, has fallen asleep, but I'm traveling there to awaken him.' The disciples then said to him, 'Lord, if he is sleeping, he will get well.' Jesus, however, had spoken about his death, but they imagined he was speaking about taking a rest in sleep. Then Jesus said to them plainly, 'Lazarus has died.'" Now, on other occasions where Jesus had resurrected individuals like Jairus' daughter, that was shortly after the person had died. But this time, however, it was different. By the time Jesus finally made it to Bethany, his dear friend had been dead 4 days. And so when they rolled the stone away in that hot country, you can imagine the body perhaps was starting to decompose. But that didn't matter to Jesus. From his standpoint, from Jehovah's standpoint, why, dead Lazarus was merely asleep. That's because Jehovah and Jesus, they don't deal in fables or stories or things that people have taught through the centuries about the dead. Jehovah and Jesus deal with realities and truth. So friends, what is the first truth about the dead? Ezekiel 18 and verse 4, if you're taking notes, says briefly, "The soul who sins is the one who will die." That's the first truth. The scriptures are very plain. They teach that every human is a living soul and no human possesses immortality. The soul dies. That is why when we consider that account in John chapter 11, Jesus, when he was trying to explain to his disciples what had happened to Lazarus, he used a very good example. He said he was sleeping. Sleep is an excellent example in this case. Because have you ever been so tired that you were dead tired? Well, have you ever seen maybe one of your kids and they're dead to the world? Well, that's because they were sleeping. That, in effect, was the same with Lazarus. He was asleep in Jehovah's eyes. That leads to the second truth that the Bible teaches us. The Bible does not teach that when a person dies, a soul or spirit residing in him suddenly leaves his body and floats off to some other place. No. Look how plainly the Bible addresses that truth in Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verses 5 and 10. Ecclesiastes 9, and starting in verse 5, "For the living know they will die, but the dead know nothing at all, nor do they have any more reward, because all memory of them is forgotten." Then in verse 10, Whatever your hand finds to do, do with all your might, for there is no work, nor planning, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave where you are going. When you consider these two verses in light of what Lazarus' experience was, it makes sense. Because that must have been the case with Lazarus. When he was resurrected, he didn't bring back some dramatic experience. He didn't say that he was off in heaven visiting Aunt Mary or his relatives. Or he didn't say that he was in a hell being reborn or perhaps as a human or an animal. No, Lazarus was asleep and there was nothing about his situation. I don't know about you, but if I was whisked away to streets of gold and pearly gates and maybe some heavenly bliss like some religions teach, I'd want answers. Why I was brought back to a cave and why I was brought back to a place where there is again sickness and death. But Lazarus never spoke of that. But I know what you're thinking. And for the sake of an argument, let's say that Lazarus died and he went off to some waiting room like some religions teach, a purgatory. Have you ever waited in a waiting room of an ER or a doctor's office for a few hours? Frustrating. Well, could you imagine waiting 4 days like Lazarus was in a waiting room? If it was me, someone would hear about it. But Lazarus never said a word. When someone dies, that teaches us, doesn't it? That he goes to the grave and there's no consciousness. There's no activity. And that brings us to the third truth. There's no fear of death that we have to have. The prophet, or the disciple Job of Jehovah, the servant Job there, he knew that about death. Job had been through a lot his whole life. He had lost family members in death. He had lost material things. And now he was sick. In Job chapter 14, it's interesting how he refers to death, that it was free of hardship and pain. Why was it a relief? When you look in Job chapter 14 and verse 3, he says in the beginning of that verse, he says, "Oh, that in the grave you would conceal me." The Bible language for conceal me actually meant as a security deposit or a precious deposit, or to hide someone like a treasure. When a person hides a treasure, is it with the intent of forgetting about it? Not a chance. You want to find out where it is. You want to find it and get it. That's exactly what Job knew about his case. He would not be forgotten. In verse 13, it says, "Until my relief comes." And then he says, "When Jehovah would remember him." He knew that he was safe. He could live again, he said in verse 14, "When Jehovah calls," because he was safe in Jehovah's memory. What's the best part about going to sleep? Waking up. You know, my 8-year-old son says to me every night, doesn't want to go to bed. Surprise, right? But he says, "I can't wait until morning so I can play again." Well, if that's how we feel, Jehovah, friends, feels the same way about all those that were lost in death. He can't wait either. And we really sense that love on Jehovah's part. In verse 15, you see what it says there? He would long for the work of his hands. When an immigrant longs for his birthplace, he wants to see it. The footnote for long actually means yearning. When an older person yearns for yesterday, they want to be back there the way it was. Some translations say desire. Desire can be strong. Desire can get you out of bed at night when it's cold, out of your warm bed on the cold floor, walk down the stairs and into the kitchen to get that piece of cake you've been desiring all night long. You know, friends, desire for people who want to see their dead loved ones is even stronger. They say it hurts. Think about it. It hurts Jehovah not to see Job. And he desires, he yearns, he longs to see maybe your child, your grandmother, your grandfather. And he resurrects individuals, not because he can, but from these verses, because he wants to. Well, Jehovah wants all those who are dead to be alive and happy too. And that's what makes the resurrection so important. Jesus taught that the resurrection is the only real hope for the dead to live again. We note that in Jesus' recorded words in John chapter 5, if you turn with me, John chapter 5 and 28 and 29. Starting in verse 28, "Do not be amazed at this, For the hour is coming in which all those in the memorial tombs will hear his voice and come out. Just like you would wake someone up in the morning, Jesus said the dead will come out of the memorial tombs also. And that's regardless of how long they've been dead. Is it easier to maybe wake up someone that's only been sleeping for an hour or 8 hours? Doesn't matter, does it? So imagine the potential to see your son, your daughter, your grandparent, their great-great-great-grandparents. But for us, sometimes it's difficult to grasp. After a person dies, sometimes our memories start fading over time. We only begin to remember bits and pieces of our relationship with that person. One person commented, she said, "My dad's been dead so long," she says, "I can't even remember him. I don't even think he was here sometimes." Is that the same with Jehovah? Does Jehovah have the ability to remember us and resurrect us? It's an important point. I mean, if he's going to promise this, he has to keep good on his promise. And Jehovah can. Remember, Jehovah made the first human out of dust. You know, to us, dust isn't much. A child takes dust and mud and he makes mud pies. A person maybe dusts a counter and takes the dust off. It's insignificant. But to Jehovah, Jehovah in the account of Genesis took dust and he made a hand. What would you do without your thumb? Or maybe if you lost your fingernail one day. Or your eyes, however you're able to see in color. With this unlimited power and perfect memory, Jehovah can recreate a person with all his memories and experiences. Jehovah has that amazing of a memory. And the Bible tells us, in one place it says, he not only counts the stars, but he names them. He not only counts them, but he names them. Did you have to write down the attendance for today? Yesterday? Day before? I did. Could you remember all the names of the 5,000 people here? Jehovah does. You know, scientists even say that the stars have colors. Remember, Jehovah names and he counts the stars. They have colors. We see a dot of white light. But the stars actually are called, blue dwarfs, red giants. Can you remember the color of the tie of everybody that you met in the past 2 days? Can you remember the color of the dress? Brothers, can you remember what your wife is wearing? Take a quick look. She's going to ask you later. But Jehovah knows. He can make an entire person with their memories back in a second. And that's because he looks at people differently. To help us with that, there's an account at Luke chapter 20. Let's turn there. Luke chapter 20. And this is the account of when the Sadducees approached Jesus with a dilemma. You see, there was a woman that had lost her husband in death, and she took advantage of brother-in-law marriage. In ancient times, if a woman lost her husband and she had no children, she could marry her brother-in-law. Well, in the context here, this woman married 7 of her brother-in-laws. Poor girl, 7 times, same family. But look what Jesus says about Jehovah in this account. In verse 37, "But that the dead are raised up, even Moses made known in the account about the thorn bush, when he calls Jehovah the God of Abraham and God of Isaac and God of Jacob, he is a God, not of the dead, but of the living, for they are all living to him." In a world where people sometimes will cut off relationships and they'll say, "That person's dead to me, that's it." They will forget about them, that's all that happens. Or, you know, sometimes people will say they've lost someone in death, they're gone forever. The scripture in verse 38 tells us Jehovah is different. It says he is a God. Not that he was their God, in other words, that they're gone. Not of the dead, but of the living, for they're all living to him. That's true despite the fact that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob have been dead for centuries. But from God's viewpoint, long dead Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, they're still living in Jehovah's memory. And in a moment's notice, he can bring them back in full health. That allows for something else that's unique about the resurrection hope. It's beyond perhaps what we think it is or what we were taught in the world. For many, the resurrection means only a resurrection to heaven. Well, that's true. The Bible does speak about a small number at Luke chapter 12 and Revelation 14, a limited number of people who are resurrected to rule with Christ in his heavenly kingdom. Just like, you know, there might be a small number of people in a government that work there. Not the whole country works there. But you know what's unique about the Bible's resurrection? It also speaks about the vast majority of those who will be resurrected in the future having the prospect of eternal life, enjoying life right here on the earth the way it was promised in the Garden of Eden and the way it was reaffirmed for us in the Bible in Psalms 37. Well, isn't that what we want? The earth can be a beautiful place, can't it, friends? A paradise like none other. And where else do we want to spend our time? So what does all of this information do for us? Like our regional convention tells us, it gives us courage. How? Take the account in Luke chapter 12. Just turn your Bibles back a bit. Luke chapter 12 and verses 4 and 5. There Jesus says, "Moreover, I say to you, my friends, do not fear those who kill the body and after this are not able to do anything more. But I will show you whom to fear. Fear the one who after killing has authority to throw into Gehenna. Yes, I tell you, fear this one." That statement in verse 4, "have no fear," sounds familiar, doesn't it? It sounds like what Jesus said to Jairus. But now he contrasts it with a different fear in verse 5. He says, "I will show you whom to fear." Jesus is showing that we should fear Jehovah. But not the kind of fear that paralyzes a person. You know, a morbid fear, like if a person points a gun at you and says, "Give me your money or I'll kill you," that paralyzes a person. No, Jesus was talking about a fear that's a healthy respect for our Creator. The one that could give life back. See, anyone can take a life, but only Jehovah can give life back. That should make us shake in our boots, really, because that knowledge is powerful. Think of what that knowledge could do for you when you're faced with difficult situations. For example, remember we spoke about the account of Jairus' daughter in Mark chapter 5? Luke chapter 8 records the same account. And it says when Jesus went into the home of Jairus, he took along Peter, James, and John. Why? Well, perhaps Jesus thought that this event would affect them later on. It did. You know, take James for instance. At Acts chapter 12, King Herod executed James. James was about the same age as Jesus, you know, 30, 35 when that happened. Now think about what James must have been thinking about when he got that verdict from the king. He probably thought, "I seen Jesus resurrect Jairus' daughter. I can do anything." Undoubtedly, James's faith was encouraged because he faced that execution confident, faithful to the end. Or take the Apostle Paul and his companions. When they were persecuted many times, they were close to death. The scripture at 2 Corinthians 1, 8 and 9 tells us that they put their trust, notice this, in the God who raises up the dead. Of all the things that Paul could have called Jehovah, he could have called him the hearer of prayer, the deliverer, Jehovah of armies, but he chose to call Jehovah the God who raises up the dead because it was this hope that gave him no fear. In modern times, Jehovah's Witnesses have shown no fear too. Take the example of Wolfgang Kusserow. He was one that was put to death during the Nazi regime during the Second World War. Shortly before he was beheaded in 1942, he wrote a touching letter to his family. This is what it said in part. "Now, as your third son and brother, I must leave you tomorrow morning. Don't be sad, for the time will come when we will all be together again." Wolfgang was on death's door. He wasn't thinking about himself. He was trying to encourage his family. I mean, those weren't the words of a man who was weak and scared, because he went on to say, he says, "How great our joy will be when we are reunited." Wolfgang Kusserow knew one thing, that Jehovah was the God that could raise up the dead. And as a result, he knew he was willing to go through anything and do anything. Faith in the resurrection can strengthen us too to cope even when we face tragic loss, maybe of a loved one in death, or we're sick. Some time ago, we were introduced to a little girl in one of our 2016 broadcasts. We want you to watch the following video. It's how it shows the resurrection hope has helped her parents to have no fear.
Felicity was a bright, vibrant little girl.
She was a beautiful kid. She really was. She embraced the fact that she was ill.
She was confident and courageous, knowing that Jehovah would resurrect her.
Felicity really enjoyed the privilege of being invited to share in the February broadcast of 2016. But sadly, just a few weeks later, Felicity passed away. When you watch a child die in her mother's arms, it's the most saddening thing you'll ever see.
The pain and the sting of death is so strong. But after some time, as time goes by, the sting starts to fade a little bit into, I just really miss that person.
Simple things like setting the table. There, that's where you need courage. There's one plate less, one less fork, one less knife, one less seat.
On the day that Felicity died, the account of Jairus' daughter actually helped Ben and I as parents.
At that moment, when he was told that his daughter had died, I know how he felt. And yet Jesus said, do not fear. His daughter wasn't dead. She was just asleep. After Felicity died, we went to the very next meeting. Many of our friends, they didn't know what to say, but they did the most important thing ever, and that's they offered a warm embrace.
The friends in our Kingdom Hall are like family to us. They really protected us. They comforted us. Sometimes there'd be cards.
The hardest thing for us to do after Felicity died was to look at the resurrection hope during our family worship.
Our children lost their sister and their friend. We were able to see the benefit, especially when we heard their private prayers at night time. They would make expressions about the resurrection hope and how they knew that Felicity was safe in Jehovah's memory.
Felicity often said that she felt the best when she was in the ministry because she didn't focus on her own illness. And since she's died, we can truly understand what she meant by that.
Our experience with losing Felicity has actually given us the ability to comfort other people. So when we're in the field and we meet people who have lost someone they love, we feel better equipped emotionally and spiritually to be able to strengthen others.
The expansion of our ministry has been something that we've really enjoyed. It keeps our minds occupied and keeps the hope more real to us. Of course, there's always a pain that won't go away until we get Felicity back, but we put it in its place. We allow it to energize our family to do the things that Jehovah wants us to do. The resurrection hope is real. It's going to happen. We just have to be patient.
Soon, friends, countless millions like Felicity are going to hear Jesus' voice and they're going to come back to life. And they're going to wake up and they're going to run, they're going to jump, they're going to do things like kids do. And they're going to worship Jehovah the way they want it to. Friends, can any of us say that we haven't been affected by death? Do you long to see that time? Everyone does. I mean, sometimes people try to find the meaning of life. They search records. They try to provide DNA in the search of their genealogy because they want to know who great Aunt Martha was. Or they want to find out how close great Grandpa Bill was. And they try to build a family tree. But you know what? Through the resurrection hope, Jehovah is going to let you climb that family tree in the backyard with great Aunt Martha and great Grandpa Bill. And they're not just going to read from papers and tell you where they're from. They're going to tell you on their own. In the beginning, we talked about the side effects of death. What would be the side effects of resurrection? If resurrection was in a bottle, let's say, of pills, what would it say on the label? The label wouldn't be big enough. So just pause. Close your eyes. Imagine what the resurrection hope will do for you. Is it like Jairus and his wife? In verse 42 of Mark chapter 5, it says, they were beside themselves with great ecstasy. Beside yourself. How could you describe that? One brother, you know what he said? He said, it's like taking two of you in order to contain the joy. Jehovah God will completely eliminate death caused by inherited imperfection. He's not just going to deal with death, like the condition of death, temporarily, like his son did while he was on earth. No, you know what that would be like? That would be like just watching the trailer for a movie of a blockbuster instead of watching the whole movie. No, 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 24 to 26, it tells us that Jehovah is going to bring to death to nothing. How should that make you feel? How did it make the parents of Felicity feel? It changed their life. They expanded their ministry. They said they are better equipped spiritually to strengthen others. And of course, they said they still had the pain until they see Felicity again, but they put pain in its place. They put pain in its place. What does that do? Have you ever forgot the lens cap on your camera? Well, the view is black, isn't it? There's no hope of getting a good picture of your family. But you put the lens cap in its place in the lens bag, and you have a beautiful view. For thousands of years, people have only had a view of death. Nothing but blackness, no hope of seeing your family, but the resurrection hope reverses all of that. At 1 Corinthians 15 and 25, Jehovah says he's going to put all enemies under his feet. By means of the resurrection, he puts the pain of death in its place. And friends, we have an amazing view ahead. Felicity's family knew that, and as a result, they had no fear. Because of the resurrection hope, it imparts courage that you too can have a wonderful view of seeing your family with no fear.
Thank you, Brother Wakeford, for presenting that uplifting discourse.